Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And today's guest is, guests are Frederick Acquaviva and Laure Lixenberg. Frederick, good afternoon. And Laure, thank you very much for both coming in. Laure is something of a surprise guest. But you are a collaborator with Frederick?
Yes.
Okay, and you are a mezzo-soprano.
Indeed.
And Frederick, I have obviously completely categorized and described you wrongly on our website, and you are now going to correct me.
No, I'm not going to correct you. I'm just going to ask you why you quoted me as a soundbite. I'd like to know. So please, the interview is now on reverse.
Well, it's a completely false assumption. I just could have, it was a wrong assumption, based on the fact that my first contact with you actually goes back a few years when we exchanged emails. About Maurice Lemaître, the letterist poet, and I knew that you were associated with Lemaître and Isou and had written sleeve notes for the Lemaître LP on Algamargan. So I wrongly assumed that you were somehow in the poetry area.
Well, not at all. You know, I walk, but I'm not an athlete, or I don't know. You know, it's sometimes you do several things, and you could assume, for example, I'm a frequent traveler because we have suitcases here in the studio.
Yes.
So, yes, I'm interested in different things, and also there is also even more than that is the letterists hate the sound poetry. Well, they just consider sound poetry does not exist.
Oh. So well, that's just, interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
But we could make the whole program that, and it's another story.
But there are associations with people like François Dufresne, Bernard Heidsieck, and so on.
Some association and dissociation, I must say, because for example, Bernard, who was also a very good and close friend, and who died recently, as you know. Uh-huh. Well, he didn't. He was in a furor when you told he was a letterist. And personally, I am also in the same position because I don't. I'm interested in the letterist. Of course, I really think they are fabulous artists. Well, a few of them. And it's like Henri Chopin. Also, he was not a letterist. The case of François Dufresne is exactly the cross of that, because Dufresne started as a letterist in 1946 when he was 16 years old, and then he jumped to sound poetry, the birth of sound poetry, but with people like Gilles Volman as well. Mm. So yes, there are connections, but not in the mind of the letterist like the Isou Lemaître branch, which is what they call letterist poetry, in fact.
Yeah, okay,
but and also which was before
the,
as well.
The CDs you sent me as well, some of them do include sort of spoken word texts and so on.
Well, yeah, but this is if you're talking of letterism, it's not text because letterism is nonsense and phonetics. So, of course, this has nothing to do. And music, letterist music also don't have any more notes, so pitches. So, of course, there's a huge difference with what I do because I work with third tone, quarter tones, and instruments and computers, which is, of course, very different from all the letterists. And according to the sound poets, well, I must say for me, it's really interesting because, and that's why I wanted to just ask you about this to make it clearer, because I think, of course, you could say you are anything, and we are making a video, for example, right now I'm a filmmaker in my mind with you, but I think, you know, I could be a poet because I write texts, but in my mind I'm not a poet at all, because I think I'm working on music for 25 years now, and all what I do is thought to be music. So even if it's a text, in fact, for me it's a composition in the form of a text. It's not. So I've done a book which I've shown you, Ideas Worth Nothing and Ideas Worth Nothing. So two books with the same content, but with a different title. Yep. And so
are you
it's not poetry.
Can we call you a composer then?
Well, you could, because also I'm not a, the other thing, you call me a musician, I'm not a musician.
You're not a musician.
Well, I'm no more a musician. Okay. I studied violin and electric guitar, and then I decided that I was not really into playing instrument, because I prefer to have people play, or also to collaborate with, for example, Laurie Lützenberg. So.
Laurie, who's now...
She's leaving.
Hello.
Walking away. She was about to leave. You can join in and tell me what Frederick is if you want. You tell me what he is to you.
Well, Frederick is many, many things. I would say that first and foremost, Frederick is a composer, but with a very strong interest in other things, that, but not in an academic way.
So right.
There's a lot of different aspects.
Is that okay?
But Frederick? I think it's very important. I think the important thing with Frederick's composition is the separation between his own composition and the work on things like the letterists.
Yeah.
So I think right. That's important.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we need to clarify the situation, because most of the people are only obsessed by themselves, and I personally am interested in other people's work.
Ah,
so
okay.
That may seem strange, but yes, I'm interested in things that are different than me, and precisely because they are different. So yes, I was... For lots of years, I was... first I met all these people, Henri Chopin, Bernard Hetzig, Izu, and Lemaître. Lemaître is the only one that is still alive. Mm. Right now, he's going to be... Well, he's 89 now.
Right.
So, of course, when you meet such people, it's a kind of a change or make you think... deeply of what you should do and what is creation, and of course not do the same thing as them, because first they're all sound poets or poets, and so I think for me it was more interesting than to meet a composer. I'm totally self-taught for music, so and that's why I call myself composer, but that's why if people call me composer, maybe I will not say no. I'll say no, I'm a sound poet. So but but that day hasn't arrived, so I'm still a
depends on the circumstances then, perhaps.
Well, yeah,
or context.
Well, yeah, but 25 years after, I still people still don't know who I am. So that's I pretty managed to make all this meet. So I'm not going to, and maybe in fact I'm not a composer at all. So we don't know. Who knows?
Right. Okay. I noticed from your CV that you did actually play. One of your venues was at the LSO St. Luke's.
Yeah,
which is only about 5 minutes from where I live. I was quite amazed by that, because I had no idea that this was a couple of years ago, I think.
Well, it's a part of it was a concert which I did because it was a part of a CD that I wanted to do with actually this CD has just been released. It's called Laurie Ipsum, because it's based on the multiple voices of Laurie Lützenberg, and so there's a composition with which is basically sung in polyphonic up to 12 voices or one, or it depends, it's not static. And then there's another layer, which is electronic manipulations through the voice, voices only. So I called it dead electronics, because in fact I'm not really so interested in live electronics, real-time processes and laptop concerts, and I do some of them, but I mean, people are really more interested in the visual aspect of music. And personally, when I go to concert, I'm interested in the music, the content, and what remains out of it, which is also a work that you can listen again. And sometimes the concert is more than about a feeling of something you experience, and that's mainly also all the improvised scene, which is quite strong nowadays. And of course, I understand this scene if you see all the academic contemporary writing, which I'm not interested in also. But so this was a kind of statement that you could write a piece with electronics, and it's not about the fact of doing it live, it's about the fact of writing a piece with this electronic, it was a kind of decomposition, destruction of the voice, and then you have destruction of a destruction and the destruction of a destruction of a destruction. It goes like increasing, so the piece is 27 minutes long, And then you have another layer on it, which is also related to the title, which is a kind of reference to the Latin Lorem Ipsum, where is that you feel when you're a typograph, you feel with Latin text in order that as you don't understand Latin, and so you can see the proportion of the text.
So the title is Lore Ipsum.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a mix of.
And the soprano or mezzo soprano is Lore Luxembourg.
Yeah,
which came first? Was there a kind of correlation, or how did that?
Well, I think the Latin comes first. It's older than the Lore Luxembourg.
But your choice of the title, I mean, how did it come about? Were you already collaborating?
Yeah, we already collaborated on another piece which was called RT. It was the second collaboration. And also, I'm interested in making. Always different pieces, and I kind of don't like when all the pieces are the same, and I prefer to write like a kind of prototype, because I think it's more creative to try to see what you can do in the field of a frame of one piece. For example, so this piece, I was interested also to put a third layer to have this kind of connection to the Latin Lorem Ipsum. So in fact, and also to have a live event, which was that Lore on stage is reading the newspaper, but only the cultural pages, because I believe the real politics is in the culture and the art scene. In fact, you can see everything about politics or any other subject, and so and also to focus really on something. So she's reading the cultural news of a country in which we are performing the piece. So she's reading in a language she might not know. So she's we've done it in at Tel Aviv, in Copenhagen, and Stockholm, also Paris. I must say, your French is not so perfect, but well, as my English. And
a shrug.
No,
is that
a very Gaelic shrug?
Gaelic.
Gaelic. Sorry.
And so
a Gaelic shrug is emanating from Laurie over here, who's behaving, restraining herself, perhaps.
Indeed, yes.
Okay.
And so I process the voice in real time this time, but I just cut it on and off, and sometimes I don't even understand what the language is, of course. So the CD was in fact, it's a triple CD, because first you have the versions with only the two first layers, sound and electronics. Then on the second CD, you have two versions. And then on the third CD, you have three versions. So in fact, they're all similar and they're all very different, because the kind of spoken text gives a really a total different meanings and coloration. And so in fact, it's all piece, you have to listen to all of them to understand what it's all about.
Have you both just arrived from Berlin? Is that?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, in fact, we have made a little trip on the motorway M25. Yesterday, we've been caught at the airport by some lunatic kind of guy. First, during 40 minutes, he couldn't reach us at the airport. But as we were stubborn, we said, OK, we're going to still wait for him. Then he tried to take the motorway. He tried to put banknotes in the credit card slide.
For the car park.
Then he couldn't find the button. I said, it's on the left. Then he went on the right. So he was also dyslexic. But we wanted to see where we were going to. And then he took the wrong motorway, but I didn't know. And then he had a problem with
a flat tire. Basically, we were on the M25 for about 3 hours.
He couldn't change the...
Who is this guy?
Well, we don't say his name, because he's a kind of artist. I think he's not a cab driver, because he's probably taken a stolen cab driver and coming from a lunatic asylum.
Okay.
So we were like 6 hour trips, or more than Paris.
So he picked you up at Heathrow?
Gatwick.
Oh, Gatwick.
So don't come at Gatwick. Choose Heathrow if you're traveling.
So you flew in from Gatwick. You arrive at from Berlin. When, yesterday?
Yes, yesterday, yeah, that's right.
So then you were 3 hours on the motorway going around London. But then you've arrived. I've met you just now, and you have two huge suitcases and what seems to be a whole publishing industry with you.
Well, yeah, because we're doing for the first time an art book fair, in fact.
Yeah.
And so off-print, which is at the Tate.
So that's off print at Tate Modern, which runs from May the 22nd to May the 25th and starts today, Friday, at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have a sort of, what should we call it, a pitch or a stand, or you will be there with all of your...
Yeah, I think we have 1.70 seats to display our stuff.
So what have you got? CDs, books, everything,
we have
records?
Well, for the last this CD, which just went out, as I said, but also a magazine. In fact, it's a bit complicated, but we have also a space in Berlin, which is called La Plaque Tournante, which is a space where there is event, exhibition, and also concerts. And so we've done this magazine, which is named CRU, which could stand for Contemporary Radical Underground,
right,
or what you want.
So I'm holding one in my hand, which is the size of an LP. It comes in a vinyl sleeve like an LP.
Yeah, because...
Shall I open it?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm sliding it out now.
You've dropped
things. Something's fallen onto the floor. Do you want to describe it? You have a deluxe version over there as well, which is an edition of 20. It's kind of difficult to...
It's made on purpose because it was difficult to do it, so I want it to be difficult for people to open it. You know, it's
okay.
Like we share the difficulties.
So, now this was reproduced on one of the CDs, and this is quite interesting, if slightly provocative. DJ's Verboten.
Oh, yeah, because we're in Germany now.
What is this? Why are DJs forbidden?
Well, because I thought, I'm slightly unnerved by the figure of the holy figure of DJ, which, to the best of my knowledge, has never been attacked. So I thought it was the first attack to a DJ, because the DJ, of course, is a night guy, the disc jockey. You know, for example, we made a bit of research, and Laurie found that the first DJ was Jimmy Savile, in fact.
Oh.
So, you know,
DJs.
Yeah.
So, the DJ now is a bit seen like a kind of situationist, you know, like he's determining all the records. But we don't need DJs all the time, you know, we can also do...
Well, there were DJs
records
before Jimmy Savile.
That I don't know.
Yeah. Of course.
Who can you say?
Well, there's been La Discotheque in London was one of the first clubs on Wardour Street, which was based on a club from Paris, which of course played. But it depends what you mean by DJ. Do you mean someone who broadcasts,
someone who the kind of people that arrives when you are doing you are in an exhibition or where you do events or concert, and at one time there's something who comes to make people dance and that kind of social thing.
Right.
So I mean, I like it, and I also think, as I said, you know, for example, this exhibition had Christian Marclay inside, and obviously, so I think, you can do something, of course, through that, and it was also a provocation, but it just, the idea was to exhibit records, for the sake of records, you know, so, are those records interesting? Not for their cover. Some of their covers were horrible, but the content was interesting. So I thought, it's cool to show these records because, I'm obsessed also with recordings. In fact, I think it's quite interesting because that is what remains after all also. Mm. And that says a lot on the history of creators, how they can manage to go through and make one record. And so I'm interested in that, yeah.
Mm.
The collision between materiality and immateriality. But I also like, of course, virtual and digital things. And this very magazine, CRU, in fact, is a kind of... So it comes in the figure, it looks like a vinyl, but in fact, there's no vinyl inside because personally, I don't like vinyl. And so there's a CD inside, there's a DVD, and there's some posters of the exhibition. And there's also a catalogue of the works that were displayed into the form of a poster, which you will find in the others. And also, there's a full online content because, in fact, the magazine is not what you hold in your hand. Once you've bought it, so it's £15 at the Tate.
Hmm.
You have to send you have to work a bit, you lazy bastards. You have to send your photos with. I'm sorry.
We're not allowed to say words like that before.
Oh, really?
Before
since Cameron too?
No. It's kind of. I think a couple of weeks ago, I had a guest, and he kept on using the word bull. with the added suffix or whatever you call it. And eventually I got a little post-it came. Somebody came down with a post-it and said, not before a certain time. So I'm sorry, it's just that children might be listening.
Children might be. Oh, fantastic. Got okay, this station. I'm very happy.
So the children should buy this magazine.
Yes.
And then they send a photo of themselves holding the magazine in hands to the email that's written on the cover.
Right.
And then you got a special code. And then you have access to the website, which is only for people who bought the magazine. And then you have all the, what have happened or could have happened at La Plaque Tournante, including also webcams during the event. So you can see all the, as if you were here, but it's not real time. In fact, I'm against real time. I think real time should be a bit more interesting in staying forever and not only the special moment.
Okay. So I'm still leafing through it, actually. There is a reference to Bernard Heidsieck. Who's the guy with the Yoo-hoo glue in his mouth?
Well, it's Bernard.
Oh,
Heidsieck.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, that's him. Okay. What's he doing? He's making a collage or something?
Yeah, he's making collage. He's made 1,500 plates of collage.
Something's fallen on the floor. I don't know. Oh, it's a CD. It'll have to stay there for now. I'm afraid I can't get at it. But it should. There's 140 people exhibiting at the Tate, aren't there?
Yeah.
So it's a big event. So you're a publisher and distributor as well, presumably? Or is that false...
Personally, I didn't want to be a publisher really, but I always publish my things, and sometimes I also publish others because I think it's the same work in a way. And also, there's a tradition of self-publishing. Mm. What I don't like is people who wait to be published. You know, but maybe this now is a bit of a nonsense because of the internet. You could say, okay, we don't need any more publishing. We're not interested in books or CD. We just put everything online. But then, you know, everything is like a melt into chaos, and you don't really find all the things. So you also need some kind of to stop to have some special focus on something. Mm. So I thought, yes, I'm interested in. I think even I like it to not to ask anyone the right of being published. And from the futurist, the dadaist, the letterist, if there's one lesson that you can get through the knowledge of that, and I know, of course, you're interested in also second-hand books. So I think what is very interesting is when you go outside what is what you can find with a new stuff. I mean, when you know about all the old stuff recycled, then it makes you really understand how the world goes, and I think it's a good lesson. So I think, the do-it-yourself, it's not only for the punk scene, it's really for anyone, and I think it's...
But the studio has temporarily sort of turned into a kind of... there's so much stuff here. You've opened up these various suitcases. There seems to be a whole plethora of CDs, records.
Well, I'll
books,
tell you what, I'm not editions. Bringing it back to Berlin, so it has to disappear at the date. So please come.
I've seen so much stuff here. Is there anything you want to draw my attention to? We saw this. I mean, it all looks of a very high professional standard. It's quite polished. Items.
Well,
refined, I should say.
Yeah, I think it's important because, I'm not, you could think that I'm interested only in the outside, but in fact, not. I think I work in two different things. First, I do the thing, and then I think, what's this, the specificity of it? For example, this book.
I'll turn up the other mic. You can. Okay.
And I'm coming back to my place now.
Okay.
So this book, for example, I wrote. It's like a notes when I moved from Paris to Berlin, because I moved 3 years ago to Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote this notes on music. So it's in fact, it was rather than writing a composer music, I thought I'm going to write notes about what I think of Berlin and. Our music, and then I thought how to make a book with it, and does it still has a sense to make a book when you can put things online? So yes, it has a sense if you're doing something very specific. And for example, I kind of place
it has a highly reflective cover.
Yeah,
it's sort of landscape format. It is.
It's like a Czech in Paris.
Oh really?
Yeah.
It looks metallic from the outside, and it's spiral bound. But I think you were saying that you basically, you read it, it reflects inside the cover. You open the cover and then you read the reflection.
Yeah, because it's printed on reverse. It's page, each page, apart from the first one. And so it kind of reflects. It's not a mirror. I could have put a mirror, but I thought it's kind of nice to have people trying to read this. And so it takes time. And that was the idea. So that's the kind of thing, you know, it's been done
What's it called, this book?
It's called, there's two ones, in fact, because it's like a brothers and sister. Ideas Worth Noting and Ideas Worth Nothing. So the second one is cheaper than the first one. But can get a discount at the Tate if you buy the two.
Okay. Right. Okay. And any other, what else, what other editions do we have here?
Well, we have also editions that I'm doing on other people, like, but actually, yeah, maybe that's bad. So I've printed 26 by far books, and so the last one is the book of Phil Niblock, which will be here at the Tate, so you have to come. Also, it'll be there
Tate Modern, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, Phil Niblock, okay. Yeah. All right, so, yeah. So this is called Phil Niblock Cello Pieces, Editions Aquaviva. And he's a significant composer, isn't he, over the last many decades. Sort of minimal composer, should we call him?
Yeah.
Is that reasonable? Yeah. Right. Published in 2015.
Yeah, it just was released, I think, last month. And in fact, it's I wanted to publish the kind of Pro Tools file because I like it. I think it was interesting as a book. And then Phil wanted to add his other cello pieces. So it's all the cello pieces with different notations. Mm-hmm. But then you have also a book of Maurice Lemaître, for example.
Oh, right. Okay. And, Maurice Lemaître.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So should we talk briefly about Maurice Lemaître at this point?
Sure.
I mean, this is called Maurice Lemaître, Photos Imaginaires Médicales, my French is atrocious, Partiellement Néo-Nazis.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
What's going on? Here, you know, he's been traumatized by the Second World War. And then it's actually is having problems, health problems. So he goes to the doctors, and then he sees he's making artworks with the traces of his medical treatments.
Okay.
And of course, he's been he's complaining about some doctors, and he treats them like neo-Nazis because they are, you know. So that's
okay,
a noise.
Okay. I mean, I'm fascinated. I make films myself, so I'm interested in Lemaître and Isu.
Yeah.
Because I mean, they are certainly in Britain. They were sort of overlooked. As I mean, the impression you get in Britain is that sort of avant-garde films started in 1966, where of course Isu and Lemaître both made radical films in 1951.
Well, I think they are very in advance in many domains, but of course the cinema is the one domain that no one can deny today. If you just look at the films from 51 and 52, that means Venom and Eternity by Isu, has the film already started by Lemaître, L'Anticoncept, which is fascinating, also by Volman, which is less known, because it has to be, you know, 2 years ago we've been at the Tate, and there was this installation by Seren Win Evans.
Oh, yes.
And it was called, it was bought by the Tate, okay? So actually we're gonna complain in a few hours, and so it was bought, and the title was called As the Film Already Started. Okay.
Oh,
so
yes, that's right.
This is the film of Lemaître. And then what was it was a balloon with a projection on the balloon, so it was L'Anticoncept. So what he did, he just put plants and he made it, you know, like the balloon, there was a kind of a moon effect, so he made something naturalistic out of something which is totally crazy, which is a great film of 1951.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning by Volman. And no one knows Volman.
I don't think he acknowledges the people, does he?
No, no. He said it's a kind of homage to the Lettres, you know, or to people. But there was not only the Lettres, there was like, you know, it was like, I don't know, Elvis Presley or whatever.
Yeah.
So a full list of people, so it doesn't mean anything. But that's not the problem. The problem is the people from the Tate who should know about L'Anticoncept.
Mm.
And so, you know, yeah, so then there's the film from Guy de Debord that people know, yeah. and the Dufresne film with no one.
All
no,
made
no
in the early 50s, yeah?
51 and 52. So, yeah. you know, when in France you think of Godard, he's invented four accords. Mm. Well, no, you know, and they all know about this because yeah. Eric Rohmer wrote on Izzo's film in 52 when it was broadcasted in Paris. So,
yeah. And there's correspondence between Stan Brakhage and... Yeah, is yeah. it Isu or Lemaitre?
No, with Isu.
With Isu.
Well, also he wrote also
so he
to
saw
Lemaitre.
Isu's films, didn't he?
Not only he saw that, but he thought it was his favourite film. He saw it 50 times, he said, and he wrote to Isu, but you know the problem with the Lettrists is they are not so open with the exterior, so they could have done... I saw some Dick Higgins letters in Isu's archive and or to Lemaitre, and they were not interested in sharing things, and so they stayed really closed, and that's also why no one knows about their stuff. But yes, Brakhage was highly influenced by the Isu film, and the Isu film is like anyone should see this film because it's really, I mean, all the underground cinema, expanded cinema, the Nouvelle Vague, it's really in those films.
But it's actually still overlooked here. It's still not acknowledged in the
It's overlooked everywhere, though. In France.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a sort of connection with Light Cone in Paris, you know, the experimental.
Some people that do the job on this level, but actually they're trying to raise funds right now to make a digital things of with those two things, and they asked me, they said the National Center of Cinema has to be convinced of the importance of these films, and I replied, well, they should wake up, you know, we're 60 years after this, and they are rescuing some navettes, I don't know how you say that, some stupid films, you know, that should be forgotten, and they don't even do something with those films. It's incredible.
Right.
But
I was in touch with Lemaitre about 10 years ago. I think I was going to show le film Déjà Commencé in London, and he communicated by fax.
Yeah.
And of course you probably know what's going to come next, but the fax machine basically ran out of paper in the end. I mean, it was just endless stream. I've still got it somewhere.
Well, that's the kind of work.
Yards and yards and yards of sort of like written texts and thanking me, you know, and if I wanted to see more of his films. And
well, then you had to buy it first because it was
But we hired it in the end, but... yeah, he's notoriously, he's quite a difficult person to deal with.
Well, he's difficult in the sense of, you know, if when you've done something as great as those people and then you're not acknowledged at all, you have a... I mean, you see the copyist of those people who are into the museums. That's a bit depressing. I mean,
I mean, it is quite interesting how the ersatz is encouraged and the originals are ignored. That is quite interesting in the museum world.
But it's like that, you know, the history is made on reverse. So first, you know, the people who are diluting the fins, who take in these fins, and then progressively people die, and then you go backwards. So that's exactly what happened with Debord. You know, Debord is so known, but no one knows. Well, people are trying now to discover the links with international letterists. So the first thing that he did, but he was also a letterist before that. And, you know, and what was his use? Nobody knows. So, you know, I'm currently also writing... the first monograph on Isu's artworks right now. I've done also one on Lemaitre. Mm. You know, there's so much to do.
Should we play something? Should we play some kind of music? What did you have? Anything you'd like to play?
Well, yeah, for example, the last CD, Laura Ipsum. So it's the work is 27 minutes. So on the CD, there's six versions. So this is one of the versions. And...
This features Laurie as mezzo soprano. You're on this.
Yes, that's right.
This CD.
I'm just curious to know which version you're going to play.
Well, I can't remember, but
okay. So do you want to play that now? Should we play something?
Okay.
Si. Thank you. X.
Okay, so that was Lore Ipsum?
Well, that was a part of Lore Ipsum, and actually it was the version without the added text on it, so okay. That's the first CD.
And this features the voice of Lore Luxembourg, who is with us today. Lore, perhaps you could, I mean, you were telling me about how you had some aspect, a view on mezzo-sopranos. I can't remember what you're saying now.
Oh, yes, no, it's just this question of how you define yourself. I mean, a lot of, as in Frederick, you know, not a sound poet, not this, not that.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people, performers now, they call themselves vocalists, and sometimes call myself a vocalist, but I like the title, or I like the description mezzo-soprano, although it has resonances with the past of a tradition of vocalization, which is linked to the bel canto technique. But I'm trained in the bel canto technique, and I'm trying to stretch that technique, go beyond it, and I use it for experimental music and to try and stretch the technique as far as I can to hyperextend the voice, right, in a sense. But it very, very much comes from that place. And I suppose that the first person who really did that is Kathy Barbarian, okay, who was also a mezzo-soprano, who I feel a very strong connection with, right, in that sense. Okay. So, yes.
Right. And in this piece, it sounds, I mean, are you continuing to perform live throughout this piece whilst it sort of disintegrates, or is that all post-production?
No, there's no live here. When we do it live, she's only reading the newspaper on the top of that. And right. I'm put it on or off and left and right, and with depends how many speakers I got, 10 speakers or blah, blah, blah.
Okay. So it sounds like it is decomposing as it goes on. Is that right? Is that sort of the
well, yeah, but that's in the process of a piece. So, of course, this is just as an extract, but it goes very differently in the process of the piece. So.
Right. Okay. Mm. And you wanted to mention, is there some concert coming up somewhere where you're going to perform somewhere, both of you, or each of you?
In London, yes, at Eclectic on the 24th, we're performing. Phil Niblock has written a vocal work for me called VS&L, and it's the one of the first, I think it's the first piece he's written for voice for me.
Oh, right.
And Guy de Bièvre, who's a laptop steel guitar player.
Oh, right.
And also it'll be various other music happening there. We're having a clip of RT.
So this is on the 24th of May. That's
May.
Sunday then.
Yes, at 8 o'clock.
Where is this?
Eclectic. It's in Lambeth. I don't know the exact address.
No, okay.
But right. Eclectic.
So you're performing live there with with Phil Niblock?
With Phil Niblock.
Oh, right.
Guy, yes.
Okay. Oh, that sounds great. And what else were you going to? Oh, this you perform on this. This is John Cage Songbooks.
That's a John Cage Songbooks. It's a CD I made with Greg Rose and Rob Warby for Sub Rosa, which was to celebrate the 100 years of John Cage.
Right.
And so we produced, it's the first ever, it's the premiere recording of the Cage songbooks, unbelievably. Mm. And most of the songs were written for Kathy Barbarian.
Right. So great. Frederick, you were going to say, are you associated with Frederick on this Tate Modern event?
Indeed, I am, yes.
You'll both be there.
Yes.
So you'll both be at the Tate Modern
event? Because we are having this launching of Cru magazine, and we are both directors of this magazine.
Ah, okay.
You have the complete staff in front of you.
Exactly. So the code of
there's also Nenad Boarevich, who's been really helpful. He made the design of the whole magazine, and also specifically the website.
Right.
So he's the kind of third member of a team.
So the Cru magazine will be launched starting at 6 o'clock this evening then.
Yes.
At Tate Modern, it will be on. What number?
I think at 7 there won't be any more issues, so you'd better.
Hurry.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a special edition, a limited edition as well, which is,
well,
that,
no,
is it just a numbered?
500 copies, 500. But we only brought 50, so.
And what's the stand? What is the number of your stand? You were going to tell me, is it 28?
Number 28, yeah.
Number 28. This is in the Turbine Hall. There's going to be 140 booksellers and distributors and artists, I suppose, of all sorts, all in the Turbine Hall, and you will be at stand 28. Okay, and what else have we got here? This is a four CD, eight CDs,
yeah.
Eight CDs on a. I mean, as I said before, the studio is absolutely just full of stuff. I mean, CDs, records, magazines, posters, leaflets, and this is Musique Kabbalistique.
Yes.
What's this?
Well, it's a piece, you know, sometimes, it came from Once I was in a place and for a concert, and sometimes there's so bad equipment or nothing, you know, happened in a they didn't even have a cables or and so I said, well, what do you want me to do, you know? And I thought, well, I must write a piece with no equipment needed, so I can do this. And then I thought, well, yeah, I can. There's this piece which I could do outdoors also, which I called Music Cabalistic. And in fact, I was in residency also with Laurie in the Emilia Harvey Foundation in Venezia, and there was Pauline Oliveros also at the same time. And I did the first piece there. I call it a piece because for me it's a musical piece. But then instead of doing a CD or recording, it appears into the form of a poster, folded poster. So what is this piece? It's a piece, in fact, I'm writing at this moment. So people are listening to pieces that are going to be destroyed or that are going to be transformed or maybe kept. And they are listening to it by headphones one by one. So the whole sound is in loop. So no one is listening to the same thing at the same time. And you can listen, I don't know, 1 second or 2 hours if you want. And so I take photos of a listener listening to this piece. And then the music remains by this poster, which has the size of a number of participants. So for example, we've done it in Tel Aviv, and there was actually it was a concert at Levantine 7. There was no audience, so the sound guy
no audience.
Really?
Are we talking literally nobody?
Okay,
yeah, not so even my mum.
Well, hopefully not your mum. I'm sorry. But so
is your mum in Tel Aviv?
No, she's in Brighton.
So the sound guy wanted to. I asked him, "Do you want to perform this piece?" And he said yes. So he's the only one, in fact, on this poster. And I quite like it because there are sometimes, like at the Moderna Musette, there's like a big crowd, and sometimes there's no one. There's one person. So when I'm not writing music, which happens also, people are looking at the people that were. Hearing the piece, so that's you can see because they have no headphones. So I've done it like 10 times, and this version you have is the Beijing concert.
Right. Okay. So you had no people in Tel Aviv.
Well, one. Well, one. The sound guy.
Yeah. And in Beijing, it was quite well attended, I think.
Well, you if you consider the number of inhabitants in Beijing, it was not so fully crowded. But it was. But also, some people don't want to participate. So one Chinese told me, "No, I don't understand what you are going to do with it." So he didn't want me to steal his soul. I don't know. So
fair enough.
Okay, well, you are listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM with today's guests Frederick Acquaviva and the mezzo-soprano Laure Lixenberg, both of whom will be at this event at Tate Modern called Off Print, starting this evening, Friday, at 6 o'clock, and runs right through till Monday, it looks like. So 140 book dealers and distributors and artists all in the Turbine Hall for the next 4 days. And you can meet or approach Frederick and Laure at Stand 28.
Yeah, you can come and say, "I don't want to meet you," for example.
Just to say, there's the address of Eclectic here, which is...
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Old Paradise Yard, 20 Carlisle Lane.
Yes.
London.
And that's Sunday evening at 8 o'clock, where you will be performing with Phil Niblock.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that sounds good. And all right, so perhaps we should... do you want to play some more, another track?
One, which is called Le Disque, which was a piece I composed during 2009 and 2010. So it's 8 parts of 40 minutes. And I've done a concert with the 8 parts in 8 different towns at the same time, including here in London. It was at the old police station.
Oh, yeah?
And
the old police station. Which one? On Bow Street, maybe. No,
I can't remember where it is.
Doesn't matter.
Because I was in New York.
It was in. It's in Deptford. The old
in Deptford.
Station.
The old, okay.
I don't. Does it still go that venue? It's a wonderful place.
I don't know it. I'm afraid.
It's really.
I'll open it out anyway. It looks like an LP, but in fact, it's 8 CDs attached to like an LP cover. Again, sort of signed Frederick Aquaviva, 72 of 100. So what do you want to play some of this?
Hang on a second.
Okay. Fading this down slightly because we have some priceless information about this. What was the voice on this, Frederick?
Well, it was a subject in a sadomasochist dungeon. In fact, as I just told you, I have a friend, Maitresse Cindy, and we were discussing, and you know, we were discussing about composing residencies, and she said, "Well, you should come in my dungeon for a composing residency." So I thought, "Well, yeah, that's quite challenging." And so the idea was, I wanted to, you know, to lock myself in order to be totally concentrated on my composition during 2 months. So I didn't want to go out. So in fact, it made also a kind of swap, because she had to be my slave. She had to come and feed me from the outside, because I said, "No, I can't go out. So you have to go and find me stuff." So she was not really pleased by that, but you know, that happened, and he was really interested, and so I kind of listened to some of the sessions she was doing, and I recorded some sounds. And this man was a German guy. It was before I went to Germany. There's no relation in that, but I don't see him anymore. And and so, yeah, it was composed there, but also composed outside in Switzerland. And
He doesn't see him anymore, or he sees him everywhere.
Yes. So he was in the next dungeon or something, or he's...
Sorry?
Where this guy that was recorded, the moaning voice.
Yeah, he was in Paris, in the donjon of Maitresse Cindy.
In this dungeon. Okay. Yeah. And you were there for 2 months, you say?
Yeah. because I wanted really to work on my piece, you know. But and it was really nice because in there I could not get email, so I really had to work and concentrate. So that's cool. Okay.
Well, thanks very much to Frederick Acquaviva and Laure Lexenburg for coming in to Resonance this afternoon. We could perhaps end with some Isu, Isidor Isu.
Yeah, so this is one of the symphonies I orchestrated for him. So I met him in, I think 98, so for the last 10 years of his life, because he died in 2007. And I recorded his first symphony of 1947, La Guerre, which had never been recorded or even played. And then we did some others, and I orchestrated the number four. We did five. Mm-hmm. And so the four is Juvenal, and it lasts 62 minutes. Actually, I got some CDs. It was released by Al Dante, and it would be also at the Tate Modern. So this is just a sample.
Fantastic. So this is also available at Tate Modern.
Yeah. So there's Isu's voice, but... Amazing. I really wanted his voice because, of course, he was very old. He was totally paralyzed in a way, and at the end, and so he, I wanted his voice because I thought it was really moving to see all the small details you could get with an old voice, because usually you don't have old voices used, and I thought it was, apart from the Pope, of course, but it was a really interesting voice.
Okay, so we'll play out with Isidor Isu.
Okay, thanks.
Consumique, bouche, chic, sucre, chic, mange.